Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. We'll have David Ubben from The Athletic coming up at 7:30. We'll get into a little college football with him. Looking forward to that. Corey Curtis for his weekly visit coming up at 8 o'clock, talking all things Titans. Taking your thoughts in the meantime, 615-737-1025. So, Joe, obviously no Titans game yesterday. I'm sitting around, and I'm watching C.J. Stroud slinging around all over the field yesterday, and he throws for 5 touchdowns, and it did get the wheels turning a little bit. I'm like, wow. So Trevor Lawrence is already in the division, and he's had a good season. He's not been great, but he's had a good season. He's got a 68% completion percentage, 1,935 yards, 7-1 an attempt, 9 touchdowns, 4 picks. So he's been good to this point. C.J. Stroud has been excellent in his rookie year. We have a very limited sample size of Anthony Richardson. I would call it up and down. Had some moments where he looked really good. Had some moments where it wasn't so good. And we have 2 games worth of a sample size from Will Levis, most of which I think has been overwhelmingly positive to this point. I did think about like the future of this division as they move forward here over the next few years. Is the AFC South about to turn into a division where there's just really good quarterbacks across the board? And I know right now, it's impossible to definitively answer that question. We just don't know enough about Richardson yet. I mean, heck, we don't know about Levis yet. We really don't even know enough about Stroud yet, even though the early returns on him have been really, really good to this point. I mean, we're starting to get to the point where it's like, okay, that guy's got something. But you can see it with all these guys. Like, you can see it with Stroud. You can see it with Levis through 2 games. Richardson made some plays before he got hurt that I thought were really impressive. And Lawrence, I don't know that Lawrence is ever going to be like one of those elite guys. Like, is he going to be Burrow? Is he going to be tier one? Maybe, maybe not. But I think he's good. So is this about to be a division where the quarterback play is at a pretty high level for the foreseeable future? And if so, what does that mean for the division? What does it mean for the Titans as you try to kind of weave your way through a division with loaded quarterback play?
That's a great question. The thing is, I would say Lawrence right now has a chance to be a strong tier two quarterback, and that's still more than I could say for any of the other three because it's just too early, but Stroud looks fantastic. Levis, way more good than bad, really encouraging. And I think Richardson, very encouraging too. The Richardson, yeah, obviously a big story around him is like, you know, how do you lean into what he does so well and not get him hurt?
Right.
Because early on, obviously he's getting hurt. But, yeah, this division could be stabilized at that position for the long term, and they could all be really good. You go around through any of the other divisions, and there's, you know, there's at least one team that has major question, you know, and even, like, long term. I mean, the Patriots, obviously, but, like, even the Jets long term, what's the – in the North, you got, I don't know, Pickett, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure on Watson either. The West, you know, you get the Broncos and the Raiders. I mean, you go through, there's not another division. The Giants, they just paid Daniel Jones. Oh, boy.
Yep.
I guess the Commanders think Sam Howell is their guy.
He's been okay.
So, yep. I mean, he's been, but, you know, I mean, the North, you know, what are the Bears going to do? I don't know. Is Jordan Love, is he?
Corey Curtis.
He just won.
Just tweeted this and goes, NFC North. Bajent, Love, Dobbs, Goff. Get excited.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, like, who's the Vikings quarterback of the future? Who's the Falcons quarterback of the future?
Yeah.
I mean, who's the Bucs quarterback of the future? Who's the Cardinals quarterback of the future? Go through all the divisions, and there's at least one team, and in a lot of cases multiple teams, that don't have an answer. And the AFC South is the only division, if you go through it right now, where I'm pretty confident in saying – well, it's hard to put a timeline on, but I'm pretty confident in saying, like, for the next few years, for the next few years, we know the 4 quarterbacks. You can't say that about any other division.
I'd say that's accurate.
I mean, I know it's 2 games of Levis, but those 2 games, I mean, they've given him next year.
For sure.
So, I mean, I'm pretty confident. I mean, he'd be the one – I guess question, because obviously Stroud and Richardson are super high picks, and but I think it's pretty clear.
And some of it's just circumstance, right? Like, how often in the past has one division had three quarterbacks drafted really high, like we just saw with Stroud, Richardson, and Levis. Like, it probably hasn't happened a ton. And then, I mean, look, Lawrence is the seasoned veteran here, and what's he, 24, 25 years old? Like, you know, it's a really young division, or young quarterback play in this division. And look, you know, if things go really well for all of them, I mean, these could be the four quarterbacks for the next 10 years in the division.
Could
I mean,
be.
You know, it's hard for me to get there now just because so much can happen in the league. And again, it's such a short sample size with Stroud and Levis and Richardson. But, like, if you're a Texans fan today, you've got to be thrilled with the way that he's – like, John McClain was on Twitter yesterday, and he called that one of the greatest performances he's ever seen covering the league. And that guy's covered the league for a long time. When you think about the no field goal kicker, they basically had no running game yesterday, and he threw for 470 yards and five touchdowns. I mean, that's a heck of a day for C.J. Stroud. So if you're a Texans fan, you're just excited as all get out today. Titans, I don't know how you couldn't be encouraged by what you've seen from Levis through the first 2 weeks. And the Richardson one is interesting because you are concerned about, like, is he going to be able to stay healthy with the way that he plays the game? But there's no denying the arm talent. There's no denying the physical ability. And honestly, when he was playing this year, he looked better than I thought he would stepping into the league this year.
Right. So, that was the whole thing. It's like, well, he needs one more year in college.
Right.
I don't know that I'm going to say that too often anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, you can good coaching is part of it too. You can figure it out. If someone's good enough, you can figure out a way to get them up to speed pretty quickly.
So there's been really positive signs from all of them to this point, which, you know, that rarely does that happen. We talked about in the draft process, right? Like, of Stroud, Richardson, Levis, Hooker, Bryce Young, what are the chances that all those guys work out? Not very high. What are the chances that two of those guys work out? In some cases, not very high.
What does work out mean?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, honestly, I mean, Trevor Lawrence is drafted to be a generational quarterback.
Correct.
I don't know that that's on the table here.
The Prince Who Was Promised, his nickname on Football Reference.
There you go. God, that's hilarious.
I need people to start calling him that.
He does look just like, what's his name, in Shrek 2.
he does.
You know, so what is that working out? To me, it's like, if he's really good and you win a championship, yes,
right,
that's working out. Now, he may not be number one pick. Like, Burrow is going to be number one pick guy, you know?
Like, yeah, do we think, are Jags fans frustrated with, like, the way that Lawrence has played? Or are they waiting for, like, the next level to get there? Because, again, like, the numbers this year, I've watched him. He's been fine.
He's good.
He's not been elite.
I don't know. Again, he's winning too.
Right.
So, yeah. And that's, I mean, I like Dustin sitting here saying he's fourth. Like, well, let's take it easy. I don't know what Levis is going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know what Richardson's going to be. And, I mean, Stroud, incredible start. I mean, at some point you pay attention. Again, the week earlier against the Panthers, he was not good. So, like, you got to, you know, sometimes people can get hot in a given day. I mean, I'm very encouraged with Stroud. Don't get me wrong, and I feel like my thoughts on him going to the draft are gonna look silly. But I also wasn't super high on Levis going to the draft, and right now I'm already thinking, boy, yep,
C.J. Stroud,
he's got it.
By the way, just on the season to this point, 62% completion percentage, 2,270 yards, 8-1 in attempt, 14 touchdowns, one pick, 14-1 touchdown interception ratio
pretty good.
Right now.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Well, and look, you also do give credit there, and you do. We've been talking about coaching trees and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I think D'Amico Ryans is a heck of a hire. And also, they bring that San Fran offense over, the Shanahan offense. He's with Shanahan, and Kyle Shanahan clearly has a feel for offense that works and that helps quarterbacks be very efficient.
Yeah. I mean, he's throwing for 283 yards a game right now, quarterback rating of 102.9. I mean, he's been excellent to this point.
No doubt.
So, is that what he is? Is there a rookie wall or a regression, whatever you want to call it? Is that coming at some point for C.J. Stroud? That's the, like, you're right in saying, we talked about this to begin the show, like, his receivers have been way better than I thought they would be. I'm still not convinced like he's got some great receiving talent around him, but they've been better than I thought they would be.
Yeah, like Tank Dell is good.
He's pretty darn good.
A very good pick.
He is.
You know, we talked about Tank Dell with the Titans.
Sure.
Going into the draft. But it's not the Eagles.
No. I mean he looks like he is elevating players around him, which that's what you want from your quarterback. And we're gonna get more information on Levis as we go here, right? That's the one. I mean, I guess if you're a Titans fan, you probably don't view it this way, but just as if you're the Colts sitting here today, that's what makes it really unfortunate is now the Titans are getting some information on their young guy and seeing him play and watching him develop. Obviously the Texans are, and with Richardson being done the rest of the year, you got a brief glimpse at it, and now you hope he gets healthy and you find a way to keep him healthy moving into next year. But like if you're Levis, that's part of why it's so important that he does work out, not only from like the timeline of you where you're at from a roster standpoint with the salary cap money that you got heading into this offseason and the flexibility that would give you, but also your division. Like there is legit quarterback competition in your division that looks like it's going to be there for a while that you got to find a way to overcome if you're the Titans.
Yeah. But so it's exciting, but also, yeah, like the level's got to be high for sure. By the way, Houston receiver, you know, Dalton Schultz goes nuts.
Yeah, he did.
Tight end. 10 for 130. Tank Dell, 6 for 110 and 2 touchdowns. I totally forgot about Noah Brown. Seventh round pick out of Ohio State a few years ago, like by Dallas.
Yeah.
6 for 153 and a touchdown. That includes a 75-yarder, but what? Meanwhile, like Nico Collins is still good, 3 for 54. They got John Metchie, by the way. Let's not forget they have him. He had one target, one catch.
Bobby Trees. He's there.
Yeah, did not register in the. So I don't know if he was hurt yesterday. Not a single target for him. I will say, like Schultz has become,
he's pretty good.
That team is, well, they're ahead of the Titans, the last place Titans.
Yeah,
in the division as are the Colts.
Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today for Vanderbilt women's basketball. The Commodores start their season today with a 10 a.m. tip-off at home against Kennesaw State. Pre-game begins at 9:30. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. We'll continue the conversation on the AFC South, the quarterback play in the AFC South. Is this about to become a division with really good quarterback play for the foreseeable future? We'll take your thoughts on that. How does Will Levis and the Titans fit into that mold? 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game, live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Got some tickets to give away. A 4-pack of tickets to MTSU football as the Blue Raiders take on FIU at Floyd Stadium this Saturday. Be caller number 3, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a 4-pack of tickets to see MTSU take on FIU at Floyd Stadium this Saturday. 615-737-1025. Discussing the quarterback play in the AFC South, Will Levis impressive through two games. C.J. Stroud lighting it up so far early in his NFL career. And then there's Trevor Lawrence in the first place Jags. Anthony Richardson with the Colts. Could this be a division that has really, really good quarterback play for the foreseeable future? Taking your thoughts on that. There have been some questions on the text line about C.J. Stroud. Remember that around draft time of the Titans reportedly trying to move up to go draft C.J. Stroud. They ended up with Will Levis through the process. But how do you think Titans fans are feeling about that one today with Levis and the way that Stroud has played?
Yeah, there's the whole, like, did the cat get out of the bag and influence others and how they acted? That can be a 30 for 30 someday.
Maybe.
And, the thing is, had Levis not played at this point, or had Levis played poorly in the last two games, I think people would be reacting to Stroud
in a
different way, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like someone right here says, per your conversation last week, is there any doubt it's 1 Stroud, 2 Levis? Seems not even close after these two. I mean, I'm gonna say, honestly, with both of them, let's hold off. Let's hold off on the parade. Levis, very encouraging two games. Stroud was incredible yesterday. Stroud was bad a week ago and lost to Bryce Young. And Bryce Young was terrible yesterday and on and on and on. I mean, well, you know, consistency is the hardest thing to attain.
And Hooker hasn't played and Richardson's barely played.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, again, the whole thing with this conversation, like we ranked him the other day. I think I am going to move Stroud up on my rankings.
Yeah, probably.
But the whole thing with this conversation, there's no wrong answer. There's no bad answer. we're all guessing. Anyone who yells at someone else and says, how could you put blah, blah, blah over blah, 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 that's the only dumb answer because you don't know. We don't know, okay? Let's please not pretend like we know. But point here made by a few people, including Skylar Erickson, O-line.
Yep.
Because Stroud does have a bit. And the Texans have been bad, and they've drafted offensive linemen, and they've got a pretty decent offensive line. And the Colts' offensive line is aging. But if you want to rank them, I mean, yeah, the Titans are the fourth best offensive line of those four right now. So,
no question.
So that is a huge critical part of this. And, you know, I think that we're trending toward the Titans. Wherever they end up drafting, I mean, I think an offensive tackle is a prominent possibility for the Tennessee Titans yet again in the upcoming draft.
Well, if you're Jacksonville, obviously you're feeling great because you're 6-2, you're playing well. Trevor Lawrence has been good. They figured some things out after that. I mean, they look pretty rough the first 3 or 4 weeks of the year, and they look like they've turned a corner and figured some things out.
Went to Europe and got it together.
Yeah, they did. So the credit to them, they're playing really well. I do, like, if you're that front office, you had to be at the draft feeling great about where you're at. You had just won the division. Trevor Lawrence played great in the second half of last year, and you looked around the rest of the division and you said, all three of those teams need a quarterback of the future, and we know how hard it is to find one of those. As you're sitting here today and you've seen Stroud play the way that he's played, Levis, albeit very limited at this point, the way that he's played, how are you feeling today if you're Jacksonville about what the outlook of this division looks like moving forward?
Well, you're the best team right now, and you're going to win the division this year. So, all right, look, you got to feel good about what you have. And I mean, I agree with anybody who, as someone texted in, Phil in Kentucky, like, I mean, Lawrence has been, he's been better, he's been very good.
He's good.
I totally agree. Like, with Lawrence, I think Lawrence is different than any of these other guys because all of these guys had holes poked in. You know, you had the whole S2 thing with Stroud, which, again, was a little bit of a weird situation. You have Richardson, so raw, who knows? Levis, personality, whatever. You know, Levis drops to the second round. Lawrence was number one overall, no questions asked. Everybody knows he's going number one. He's going to be a generational quarterback. Unlike the other three, Lawrence came with this, oh, this could be the next dude. Like, right now the dude is Mahomes, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's one difference. These other guys, like, they don't have the same level of expectation coming in. But yeah, if you're the Jags, I mean, you've come back from just a brutal stretch to be the best team in the division. I mean, in the Jags, I don't consider them a contender this year, but you know what? If you're a Jags fan, if things can keep getting better and improving with the way ATN's playing, the defense is playing better, why can't you in January cause problems and have a chance to make a run? I mean, they have a chance this year.
Yeah.
The other teams are, you know, they got hope for the future, basically.
I mean, right now Jacksonville is the number 3 seed in the AFC. Kansas City 1, Baltimore 2, Jacksonville 3.
So
things can change,
get a home playoff game, and who knows? By the way, Baltimore does look pretty good.
They look pretty good.
It's a pretty good team.
And they did it, and they're doing it, like, with OBJ, like, not even really being that much of a factor, and they still look pretty darn good.
They do. But, you know, Jacksonville, I mean, that's so long-term, yeah, I guess if you're Jacksonville, like, wow, it'd be great if everybody else sucked.
Yeah.
They all got their quarterbacks, and we'll see. But right now, I mean, if you wanted to bet, like, 5 years from now, which of these quarterbacks will be the best? I mean, the safe money is still Trevor Lawrence.
I would agree with that. I mean, it's hard not to be encouraged by what we've seen from Levis. Now, as more tape becomes available on him and defenses start to game plan for him, how does he respond to that? Because, look, I mean, Joe, we've seen rookie quarterbacks come in and look really, really good for a few weeks, and then all of a sudden there's more tape on them and their play drops off and they're never really the same. Again, we've also seen rookie quarterbacks come in, look terrible, and then they figure things out and look a lot better as things go. So it's not the same path for everybody. But, like, if you're Levis and assuming he continues to be the starter this year for the Titans when Tannehill comes back, is there a level of consistency that he brings to the table where you look around at the end of the year and you say, all right, that guy, game in, game out, it wasn't always perfect. There were some mistakes that he made, and he's going to make as a rookie and all those things. But for the most part, it was pretty darn good, pretty darn consistent, and you feel great about where you are as a team moving forward. I mean, we're getting there already with Stroud. Like, Stroud has put together some consistently pretty good football so far this year. Can Levis do that as the season goes on here, and can he get to a place where by the end of the season you're not only feeling encouraged about what he could be, you feel great about what he is if you're the Titans by the end of the year.
So you think Tannehill's going to get hurt again? What if Tannehill just starts the rest of the year?
Well, I mean, if he came back in and started behind that offensive line, yeah, I think he'd probably get hurt
well,
again.
Well, yeah.
I think at some point he probably would.
But it's funny because everything you say makes sense, and it's what everybody wants to see and find out and get a head start. And, I mean, I don't know for sure that Will Levis starts this week.
There's a chance that next Monday at this time we are talking about Ryan Tannehill starting for the Titans in a win or a loss against Tampa Bay the day before.
It's possible.
There's a chance that could happen.
For the record, I do not think that will happen.
I don't either.
I know, like, Sam Fanlon of A to Z tweeted right after the press conference, well, that press conference basically sounded like Vrabel's going with Tannehill. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so, man. I mean, you may be right. You may be right. He left it open, but, I mean, I expected him to do exactly that. I think he's going to go with Levis.
I hope so.
If not, then Titans fans will get angry, and I will apologize to Sam.
Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders,
really,
and Derek Mason, like really angry, at Twin Peaks in Madison this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 for our NFL pregame show. They'll break down the Titans Week 10 matchup against the Buccaneers and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed. Coming up next, we'll be joined by David Ubben from The Athletic. We'll talk a little college football with him. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Monday morning. Talking a little college football, and to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend David Ubben from The Athletic. David, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for taking time to be with us. We appreciate it. So, David, as we sit here today on the morning of November 6th, who is David Ubben's best team in the country?
Well, I mean, I guess you got to go Georgia by default, right? I don't think that they're as just, like, unbeatable as they've looked at times the last couple years. But, you know, you look at the season. I know Michigan's been really dominant. I have a lot of questions about the noise and how that might affect them over the next month. And, of course, as dominant as they have been, the schedule has not been great. So I'm going to go Georgia. Not by default. They've been really good, but they've been stacking some pretty good wins, and you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody that's a more complete team.
Well, a couple weeks. Yeah. First of all, you got Tennessee, Missouri. Missouri, man, I thought they had a real chance there. I mean, I hate to be Mr. like, you know, PI gets called for one team, doesn't get called for the other team. Stuff like that happens, but, you know, Missouri screwed it up, but I feel like Tennessee has quietly really improved as a team. I'm fascinated by this Tennessee-Missouri matchup this week. But I really think Tennessee has a shot. I think Tennessee-Georgia, for the first time, is going to actually be a competitive game in Knoxville. Am I overreacting?
No, and I'll tell you why. In 2022, Georgia was third in the country in yards per carry allowed. In 2021, they were number two. Do you know what they are this year, Joe?
Not that good.
47.
Wow.
Just one spot behind Syracuse. You can run. You can run on this Georgia team. And Missouri did it. Cody Schrader, D2 transfer from Truman State, got it going against them. They won that battle up front, and he had a 100-yard day against them. And that's what Missouri likes to do. You know, Missouri is going to challenge them Tennessee is going to challenge them in different ways this year than they did last year, where it was, a lot of big plays and looking for the ball downfield. And that requires protecting Hendon Hooker and trying to beat their DBs deep. That's tough to do. They're still really good through the air. But if Tennessee can win some battles up front, and use their, you know, 85 running backs that they have that seem to all be really effective. You know, it's a decent matchup for them. And, of course, you know, that's going to be a crazy crowd. It's not a night-night game, but we're post-daylight savings time. That'll be a night game in essence, sort of. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. And they'll have a shot, and it'll be a tough test for Georgia. But I think this is a pretty good matchup for Tennessee.
David, what do you make of the way that Milton has played, specifically the last 3 weeks? I mean, you know, obviously he was very inconsistent before then. Great first half against Alabama. He looked good for the whole game against Kentucky. I mean, last week is UConn, so it just kind of is what it is. But overall, mm-hmm. What do you make of the way that Milton has improved?
Well, you know, you don't need him to be Superman. You need him to make the throws that he has to make. When you've got an open guy, whether that's 40 yards downfield or 8 yards downfield, you've got to take advantage of those opportunities. And I think, obviously, when you start getting in games like the Alabama game, like the Georgia game, where it's the difference between, you know, winning and losing, you've got to be able to make those throws and avoid big mistakes. And, you know, you're going to be defined by those games, you know, how you play against Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. And, you know, right now, for better or worse, Tennessee is 0-2 in those games. They've taken care of business everywhere else, but they're going to have a shot against Georgia. And so, you know, he's improved. I think you'd like him to be a little better, a little more accurate. I think they've done a good job of using his legs in the right spots. They're probably going to need to do more of that against Georgia. You saw Brady Cook have some effectiveness there. Joe's not quite as quick as Brady, maybe, but he can run downhill and get you 8 when you need it. So, you know, I think they know they're pretty. Tennessee seems like they're pretty aware of what he can and can't do. And you know, if you're dropping him back there and saying, "Hey, we need you to throw 55 times today," that's probably not going to work very well. But they don't really do that, so. I think it just comes down to he's got to be able to make the throws that you get where, hey, got to have this one, and you've got to have it. You don't need him to be Hendon Hooker and make some, like, insane throws. If he's good, that's good enough for Tennessee to be a team that's really tough to deal with.
So I do have a bone to pick with you, David, because, uh-oh, you know, you were pre-shaming people for having Connor Stallions as a Halloween costume, and I thought
– As I should.
No, mm-hmm. It's – come on. Current events, it's totally fine. No. I had a great no. – I had like a Secret Service kind of idea with like a suit and a, you know, sunglasses. It would have been awesome. Didn't end up going to the Halloween party or else I would have done that. But, no, I mean, come on. We got to have some fun with the Connor Stallions thing. Meanwhile, tell me what you think is going to happen with the Connor. I mean, there's so many things. But, like, what's the ultimate fallout here? I know, to me, one, college football is going to go to the headsets, right? I mean, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Like, that'll be one of the big picture developments. But what about, like, what do you think is going to happen here? Like, with Harbaugh, with that program, and how mm-hmm. it affects this season?
Well, ultimately, Tony Petitti has a tough call here, and I find it amazing that if you make a move here, whether that's suspending Jim Harbaugh, I have a hard time believing you would do something as drastic as banning them from the postseason or making them forfeit games. But if you suspend Jim Harbaugh, I'm sure Michigan would be furious. You know, whatever. The rest of the league would be pretty happy, and I'm sure that would include, you know, Washington and Oregon, who are probably kind of sitting there watching, USC, UCLA, kind of sitting there watching, not involved in these discussions, but certainly paying attention, I'm sure. And if you don't do anything, you're going to have probably 15 teams that are not your biggest fans, and Michigan ready to pat you on the back, you know, in a dark alley and say thanks. To me, if you're playing the politics game, which, fair or not, that's a part of this, I might do the thing that 15 people want me to do, and not the thing that the one school will be furious about, even though it is Michigan, even though it's one of your biggest brands. It's tough because this is an unprecedented situation with no clear punishment. So you're kind of having to make it up as you go. So I don't envy him, but it's clear they did something. And if you, you know, don't punish that or leave that up to the NCAA to drop some sanctions in 2027 after this is long gone. For a new commissioner who doesn't have any capital built up, You know, Kevin Warren, for better or worse, was largely defined at how he handled the COVID situation and sort of the will they, won't they, in and out, you know, weird four-game season that, you know, didn't really make anybody happy and had people, you know, picketing the league office. And I think Tony Petitti, for better or worse, is going to be very, very influenced by how he handles this.
So on the field, I mean, you said it earlier, David, Michigan's schedule has not been great to this point. They do go on the road to Penn State on Saturday. So how do you think they'll handle this on the field? And do you expect that Michigan gets through the rest of this year undefeated heading into the playoff?
I do. I was really curious to see, because it's a twofold question with Michigan, right? On the one hand, this is an insane situation for a program to have to deal with where, you know, maybe you woke up this morning, you found out your coach is suspended for three games. You don't know. You know, maybe that happens tomorrow morning. Maybe it happens Wednesday morning. Maybe it never happens at all. There's this cloud hanging over. And then there's all the conversation around your program. And I'm sure the constant questions by people in their life and you know, in the media and all this stuff. And then there's the question of, well, if you don't have people's signs now and you don't have the Stallions operation, which seemed to be abruptly halted the week before the Penn State Ohio State game where the tickets were bought and went unused. Well, I've compared it to the American cinema classic Like Mike. If you don't have the special shoes anymore, are you still Superman? It's a fair question. Now, on the latter point, I think the way that they play against Purdue says something. I mean, if they win that game like 20-10, the conversation on Michigan was going to get real interesting. Now, it's a different challenge against Penn State. I think they'll be okay. I think they definitely, you know, the science leagues have definitely influenced them, but the defense is still pretty good. I think you're going to see a low-scoring game, but if you win that game convincingly, I think it does help you in terms of just, like, you know, shutting up the latter part of the Like Mike scenario where, you know, your shoes are gone, taken by a young Jesse Plemons in The Orphanage.
Yes. What a great film.
Yeah. It is. It's one of the best of all time.
I'm with you. It's going to be fascinating. I mean, how dependent were they on this? How much did this really help them? I mean, it had to be some kind of factor. I mean, there's so many videos of, like, Stallions barking stuff at, like, Jesse Minter, and so, you know. It's like, my gosh, I'm sure you see, like, the Ohio State, you know, whatever. It looked like they called the safeties in on something they knew was a run. It's amazing to think about what this could be. But I'm with you. I mean, I still think they could easily run the table here. You mentioned, David, that Georgia, you think Georgia's the best team. What about these Pac-12 teams? Because I feel like the Pac-12 got disrespected in the first playoff rankings. And I know the first playoff rankings, you have to, you know, understand what they are, take them with a grain of salt. But what do you think about that league and how that's going to play out from here?
Well, they have a bunch of good teams, but I think you look at these teams in general, and I look around at the Pac-12 and I see one complete team, and that is Oregon. That is a team that has obviously a very effective offense and a defense that actually rates higher than Georgia on the yards per play aspect of things. You know, you've got UCLA is the only defense in the league that's better than them, but they don't have the offensive power that sort of was painfully obvious for them this weekend against Arizona. And Washington, probably a better offense, more explosive, and have a little more weapons, a receiving core that can stack up with Ohio State. But defensively, they're not great. And you saw USC sort of exploit that on Saturday, and they got dragged into a track meet that they were able to survive. So I still think we are dead set for a rematch in Vegas. And I suspect that Oregon, who outplayed Washington the first time but missed on a couple of fourth downs and gave up a pretty dramatic you know, late drive and then missed a kick to send it to overtime in Seattle. You know, I think on the turf with, you know, perfect conditions and not a road crowd, I think that they avenge that loss and get into the playoff.
David, last thing for you here. Alabama takes down LSU. We know the quarterback drama earlier in the year, the loss to Texas, all those things. It's clearly Milroe's team now. How good do you think this Alabama team is, and are they a threat for the playoff to actually win the SEC in your mind?
Well, they're going to get to Atlanta, so we know that. I mean, you look at the rest of their schedule, it's hard to see them really getting pushed. They have won games where they have not played well. They've rallied in the second half. It's been really impressive from them. But the question is, can you get by Georgia? You know, Georgia's a pretty balanced team. Not as great, obviously, as you mentioned, in the run defense as a year ago. They're not just like an unbelievable defense. They're a very good defense, one of the best in the country. But they're not, you know, I think after the game on Saturday night, Kirby Smart kind of halfway referenced that the 2021 Georgia defense was like one of the best three defenses of all time in college football. I mean, that's probably up for debate, but it's not an insane thing to say. They don't have that anymore. And they don't have the same sort of reliable offense, but they have a bunch of weapons. And we'll see if Brock Bowers is back. I suspect he will be by the time they get to Atlanta. They still got a month to prepare for that. So Alabama's dangerous. I still think that the warp that they had in the preseason, where I have a lot of questions about their weapons, their offensive line, I think they rank like 119th in pressure rate. Jalen Milroe is getting pressured on 38.9% of his dropbacks. That's extremely high. That's not what you want, and Georgia's going to exacerbate that. And you got guys like, you know, Michael Williams coming after him all the time. So it's not impossible, but I still think that those flaws that Alabama has are going to be exposed by a team like Georgia that, you know, is more equipped to go all the way on you. Like, you know, Tennessee sort of wilted in the second half there. Texas A&M didn't have the offense to take advantage of some of Alabama's struggles. And I, you know, an Alabama team that people don't think can win a game is always a dangerous one. The last time I think we saw that, they beat the so-called best offense, best defense ever by, like, you know, they put 41 on them in the dome in Atlanta. So you never know, but you look at them, and I think Georgia exposes them in Atlanta.
Well, David, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
David Ubben from The Athletic with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Shut him up hard.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45-ish here on the program. Joe Rex Road, the floor is yours.
Okay, wait, what was the last quote there? I mean, I know the remember the Titans part. What was the last thing?
He said, shut him up hard.
That's from that movie?
Yeah. It's the other coach. He's walking over to his player. He's telling him to shut him up. They're doing that stuff in the pregame warning.
Okay.
Didn't go well for that guy.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Spoiler alert.
All right. Yeah. Good movie. Check it out. Well, I'm going to talk about high school football today. Not really in specifics, because I think this is a universal thing, which I kind of said at the beginning of the year, but I guess I'll have to say it again. So, specifically, thank you for the great season, Coach Derek and the Nolensville Knights. Heartbreaker. Lost to Tullahoma. Congrats to Tullahoma. Injuries got us, but, you know,
Full credit to Tullahoma.
Yeah, exactly. No, not making excuses. They had some very tough injuries. But I will reiterate something that I don't know where this goes on the top five or top ten of pet peeves. It's pretty high, man. If you're a high school football parent and someone else's kid makes a mistake, doesn't make a play, whatever it may be, shut your effing mouth. Keep the kid's name out of your mouth.
Shout out to
Will Smith. Also, you know, look, this is, I mean, winning does matter, and these coaches, you know, communities count on these coaches and all this stuff, right? So, look, I understand if you don't like a play call or whatever, but really you need to shut up, too, if you want to scream at coaches. You know, I mean, if you get to the point where you're screaming at coaches during a game and the coach, like some coaches are like turning around and looking back, and you get to the point where people in the bleachers are moving away from you because you're screaming at the coaches about something,
yeah,
maybe you need to look at yourself and shut your effing mouth.
I guess I had been away from it for a while. High school football, really high school sports in general. I was at a high school football game a month ago, and just standing there away from the bleachers, I was on the kind of the sideline over there, and listening to some of the things that got yelled on the field. I was just like, what is going on here? This sounds like we're in Neyland, in like the middle of a Tennessee-Alabama game. What the heck's going on here? Right.
It's not that. I mean, there's got to be a different. Like, go to an NFL game, boo. We've talked about boo all you want.
Absolutely.
Boo them. And you know what?
Yell at the refs, do whatever you want.
Sure. College, too. I mean, you know, and I guess it's even a little different now, NIL, whatever, yeah, with the players. But certainly you can yell at coaches. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's high school, guys. It's kids. These are kids. And these are coaches who are not getting rich coaching the kids.
Yeah.
And so, again, if you think you can do better, then get into the coaching realm and coach youth and coach middle school or whatever. If you know, you're a teacher, you want to be a coach, that's great. You want to officiate? Okay. Well, then get into officiating. You want to? I mean, look, I'll raise my hand, okay? Because there was a call in that game, and it was not good, and I yelled. I yelled at the call. That's a terrible call. How could you make that call? It doesn't have to get to the personal stuff.
Right.
Or the threatening stuff, things like that. But even then, I was like, yeah. I mean, I try not to do that stuff. But yelling at the players or coaches, I mean, seriously, guys.
Yelling at 16-year-olds?
High school football. Yeah, it's you're right. And, you know,
I couldn't believe it. I was just like, wow, this is really intense. This is, you know, I won't throw people on the bus, but this is like my alma mater. I'm sitting there just looking around like, what's going on around here? You guys taking this seriously.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's like we're bringing attention to something that – from what I've seen, I mean, it's not like it's super widespread, yeah, you know, but it's a few people. And again, especially just like kids are going to make mistakes and stuff, and it's disappointing and all that stuff. But man, I mean, you got to be able to control yourself better than that, don't you? You can't, especially if you have a kid on the team. You have a kid on the team, and you know, again, that these are kids and that everybody's going to make mistakes, all this stuff. And I know everybody wants to win, and it's emotional, and it's heartbreaking when the seniors are done. But, like, you have a kid on the team, and you're going to scream at another kid making a mistake? Like, seriously, what's wrong with you?
It's not good. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans, the day of action yesterday in the NFL as well. All that up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.